Not just anybody. You know, I need someone. When I was young, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. Now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now that I'm in the gentle mind, I'll open up the door. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio Studio B, this 26th day of July, 2024, where I'm delighted to have as my featured guest today, James Perloff, who has a new book on the Lincoln assassination. It really goes further, deeper, dissects the elements, perhaps better and more impressively than any past work, even though, of course, the Lincoln assassination, like that at JFK, has been studied voluminously in the past. Before we get there, and I've invited John Garment, former Secret Service, to join us today for an observation he would make about both of those events and also seeking to elicit both James and John's comments on some developments regarding our present president, where there are a number of very peculiar developments. Here's an interview just appeared with Joe Biden's brother, who said, of course, it was health concerns. But what I'm struck is his countenance. Look at that. That guy is indistinguishable from the man we have seen. And he's got that funny chin, too. This might be one of those who've been subbing in since, of course, the real Joe appears to have died in 2017. Now, here's a guy behind the Oval Office talking. Notice his hands. I have colleagues who work in Hollywood as stuntmen, for example, who say these hands are too young to be that of this guy in excess of 80 years old. Let's take a look.
My fellow Americans, I'm speaking to you tonight from behind the Resolute desk in the Oval Office. In this sacred space, I'm surrounded by portraits of extraordinary American presidents. Thomas Jefferson wrote the immortal words that guide this nation. George Washington showed us presidents are not kings.
My fellow. But more interestingly, they've ruled out a new Biden. Take a look at this. The guy looks like he might be a basketball player. There's Jill clapping and I was just floored when I saw this. Did my eyes deceive me? I'll play it again.
That's the lens they're using, Jim. It's like a wide-angle lens. It's a long lens.
Nothing. Now, I asked my daughter and my wife what they thought, and they both said it was a camera angle, but here's proof. It's not a camera angle. The guy's 3, 4, 5 inches taller. I mean, this is unbelievable. Look at the difference. And there's Jill. I'm going to get you in, John. And there's Jill, you know, just going right along with it. And how about this? How peculiar is this? Look at the holes in his ear. I don't think I've ever quite seen anything exactly like that. Plus, here, of course, we have the signature of the statement where he's withdrawing, and I'm not alone in observing that's a fake signature. Here you have, from my past research, the original double for Joe, who has a very different signature than the real Joe, including that he adds Junior. Joe wrote out J-O-E Biden. This guy writes R. Biden Jr. But go back and look at this. There's no junior, and there's an underlining, clearly a fake signature. Very, very troubling. James, let me get your thoughts first, and then I'll turn to John. What's your take?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if John has a better take than I do. I saw that video you sent me, and I know quite what to make of it. I know that Joe is taller than Jill, and there seems to be some height difference, but I don't doubt some of these reports that there's been more than one Joe Biden. I'm not quite sure what to make of the height difference there. He does look sturdier than you normally see him when he comes out to speak to the public. But it's too short of a time and too little pictorial evidence for me to draw any kind of certain conclusion about it. But I certainly would say this, there's always deep state fakery going on. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I don't want to put you on the spot, James. Listen, in my research on the death and replacement of Paul McCartney, one of the strongest proofs is that the replacement, we call him Fall, known as Billy Shears, William Shepherd. He was introduced in the Sergeant Pepper as the one and only Billy Shears. He's 4 inches taller than Paul. You
Yes,
would
you're
think
right about that. Yeah, you're right about that. I
that.
have an article. It's the only guest article ever on my blog, jamesperloff.net. It's been written by Patrick O'Carroll, a very extensive analysis of the Beatles, how they came to be, how they couldn't have produced some of those albums in the short amount of time that they were given, and definitely evidence that you're right. Billy Shears, who appears to replace Paul McCartney, was definitely taller than the original Paul. And I think you can make a strong, as a matter of fact, but let me go back to 1969. I was a freshman in Woodman Hall, a dormitory at Colby College in Maine. In 1969, I had a there's a guy down the hall. He had a tape machine, and he played one of the Beatles albums backwards, and you clearly hear a voice saying Paul is dead on that. So even in 1969, and we're talking 45 years ago, there already was discussion of Paul
Oh,
McCartney
yeah.
being dead. Yeah.
Yes. Two Italian forensic scientists sought to disprove
Right.
the hypothesis, one at confirming it. They discovered Paul had bad teeth and a narrow palate, whereas fake Paul, Billy Shears, had good teeth and a normal palate. John, you want to get in here on this new Biden? Your thoughts?
Oh yeah, nice to meet you, James. We're going to talk off the air, hopefully.
Sure. That sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm seeing all these pictures of the White House, I worked there when I was Secret Service, so I've got personal firsthand knowledge, and I've actually sat at the Resolute desk because that was Kennedy's desk. So everybody knows the history about the fact that it was a gift from John F. Kennedy from the Resolute, which was a ship, and he recovered the ship. Queen Elizabeth gave it back as a desk with actual parts of the ship with the presidential seal on the front. And you guys may have even seen pictures of John and Caroline playing with the little doors, that there's a secret door in and out of the desk thing. So it's kind of funny because I used to check the hot phone, which was in the lower left side, but they've changed the technology. But anyway, back to the Biden thing. The signatures are different. I've done analysis before and things like that before. Yeah, there is a height discrepancy, Jim. It's really weird. And I look at the ears. The ears are the most exact pieces of information. I've debunked people that said, "Oh, Bob Joyce is Elvis. He's not. He's got ears as big as mine, and Elvis has chipmunk ears." Real simple. All you have to do is get a picture of your ears, and that'll clean it out. And I got pictures of a Michael Jackson that'll blow your mind. But yeah, there seems to be some problems with that. And as soon as I saw the picture, I've seen the picture, and there's a problem with that. The other original picture of them walking out of the Oval Office along that little cavalcade, whatever you want to call it, is the route that he would take to go back to the main mansion. And the lens that they use is not the regular lens of a camera, so it may be altered to look at that way. But the other picture where he's obviously like, 3 feet, 2 feet taller, and that's not the head. It doesn't match up.
I think it's 4 to 6 inches. Let me go
Yeah,
back to
there you go.
those images
Yeah,
because
people normally lose height like I have since
here you
66.
have it. Here's the comparison. Staying beside Jill, you got
Right.
a line across her eyes for comparison. And I'd say 3 to 4 inches. What did you, James, would you agree? I'm just taking these photographs at face value, not putting you on the spot, James. When you say it's a 3 to 4 inch difference?
He definitely looks taller on the photo on the right, because there's always little factors you have to consider, like was she perhaps wearing high heels? I don't mean to throw a damper on things, and I'm not saying this is not correct, but there are different factors that come into play within photographs, but you're probably right.
And it has to be the exact same height that they're standing on. So if they're standing on the same level platform and she is wearing the purple outfit, then that would be equal to whatever. But the lens that they're using bothers me because the lens is kind of overdoing a little bit.
I saw this. I said, whoa, because this guy looks like he could be a basketball player. Ridiculous. I think they're doing it again. Scamming the American people, I think, will believe anything.
Check out the cartilage on those ears, though.
What's that? Here, John, you want to comment
on
the
ears? The ears on the cartilage match, even though they're at a separate angle. One's bending over. That's going to be obvious. One's slightly back. But you can still identify people, because even when I was U.S. Customs or Secret Service, you look at quarter... A 45-degree angle on the photos, usually, so you can see the ear. That is a key identifier. You may be able to alter the lips, the nose, the eyes, but the eye sockets are always usually the same if it's the same person, no matter how old you get. So that's part of my identification analysis stuff, because I'm a professional profiler. But, yeah, that appears to be the same.
Okay, listen. Yeah, I want to get your take, too, on this adjustment in relation to Butler. Trump's campaign takes new safety measures after assassination attempt, narrowly escaping death, took a bullet to the ear. One other person died, two injured. Secret Service is under fire, resignation of the head. He plans to stop holding outdoor rallies. This is at the advice of the Secret Service. Current plans are to hold indoor rallies. He may, however, occasionally participate in smaller outdoor events or larger rallies in facilities where entrances are more fully controlled. That means, for example, football stadiums. Indoor rallies are a safer option, no doubt. Controlled entrances and secure facilities like stadiums reduce the risk significantly. Are there something uniquely electrifying about Trump's outdoor events? They become a symbol of his political strength and connection with supporters. Moving indoors may feel like a win for safety, but a loss in spirit. The campaign is doing what it must to ensure his safety. Given the recent attempt, they aren't just prudent, but necessary. It does, however, raise a question. Is this a temporary shift or a permanent change in his campaign strategy? The switch to indoor has a psychological impact in addition. The outdoor rallies are a testament to his resilience and ability to draw large, passionate crowds. Scaling back may be seen as a concession to those who wish him harm. Despite the attack, Trump remained defiant. His resilience is part of his appeal. His ability to bounce back only strengthens his image. But there's a fine line between bravery and recklessness. The campaign's decision reflects a careful balancing act. Now let's go back to Butler. Here you see that iconic photograph of his fist raised, fight, fight, fight. Patrick Maché asking, was it allowed to happen? Well, that's putting it mildly. I love this headline from the Babylon Bee. Trump indicted for inciting an assassination attempt. Yes, of course. Now here's some classic footage of what we...
And you know, that's a little bit old, that joke. That joke's a couple of months old, and if you want to really see something that's said, take a look at what happened.
What the fuck, man? Let's play it again.
And you know, that's a little bit old, that joke. That joke's a couple of months old, and if you want to really see something that's said, take a look at what happened.
Now, we know the security was ridiculous. Look at this bomb hole with a big notch in it for just those buildings. There were not very many buildings in the area, and they didn't cover the water tower either, which was the highest structure. So clearly, this was all wrong.
Oh, there you go.
Hang on, below you can see the path he took. He even had brought his own ladder, and it was a pretty substantial ladder to get up on the roof. He was actually further on the other side, but there's the water tower. And now we have, of course, this bloody ear. Here you can see what looks like a hole in his ear. One of the questions has become is, was there enough blood here for it to have been real? Notice his collar is not bloodied at all. I mean, that's rather surprising. I believe there was a real plot to kill Trump. Here you had the Austin Private Wealth Company shorting 12 million shares of Trump stock, a huge bet that the business value would plummet. And they represent ACLU, ADL Austin, Shalom Austin, Jewish Community Center, Camp Young Judea, Congressional Beth Israel, Austin Jewish Academy, Hadassah. I want to say these all lend weight to the idea that there was a real shooting taking place. John, I can tell you are eager to add comments. Go.
Oh, could you please bring it back to that circle with the
sure. Absolutely.
That is the best diagram. And you know, I've been doing interviews since the 13th about all this. I need you to send me a screenshot of that because we had it on a previous show before, but I want to tell you guys something. Based on further information, there are three windows, and I know you can't see this, but I'm using my cursor. Just go down from where the body of the guy that they claim is Crooks, his name is probably Matthew Yearwick, has a serious background and went to Ukraine. And the film video, and I'm giving you updated information that's within a couple of days of the actual stuff since the 13th. The guy they filmed showing walking around had like grayish colored pants, a grayish colored t-shirt. And he had the long brown hair, and they showed him going up to the building, around the building, eventually ends up on the top. The guy on top of the building that got shot had shorts on. So either he has the zippered pants where he could take off the cuffs, or that's a separate guy, but that's a separate piece of information. I remembered that the tower was covered up in plastic. That's a separate issue too. But there are three windows just off the end of that building where the body was found. To the left is the other building.
Three windows in this vicinity, John?
Yes, sir.
Or all the way up here?
Yeah, no, the other way. Right here. There. No, right there. That, okay. Down.
Yeah.
Right there. Draw a straight line. That's the shooter. That's the actual shooter from a window. The other guy was a decoy. I'm telling you right now, my background and all this other stuff, I've always said, show me the line of attack where it was, and you could show from the right all the way to that window and not the other guy. The angles are perfect. Not the guy on the roof. That was a decoy. So they took out the decoy, lone male gunman. You never get to talk to those guys because they're dead. The actual shooter got away, and he was from the building. There are three windows. One's open, middle one may have been closed, and maybe even the third one open. But you can see the first window along the perimeter of the side of that building makes a perfect line through that area where the people got shot at the bleachers into the area where Trump was standing. That is John Carman's assessment. That is what's going on. And I've been looking at videos all day yesterday for a couple hours. It's mind-boggling.
Okay. And we actually do have, I inadvertently left out, you know, putting.
Yeah, and there's other stuff dealing with the tower. That would be the highest level that anybody would be covered. Secret Service could have secured that area. And obviously they had plastic covering. Well, if that's the date of the actual occurrence, all this BS later where they're trying to say they saw a shadowy figure, that's CGI. They're just trying to throw you off. You know why? Because the actual shooter is in one of those windows down below in that other building.
Okay.
That's what they do.
Does this look like real damage?
Oh, yeah, that's real, but I think he got nicked on the edge of the ear.
So it's not here? This is what appeared to me to be like a .22 caliber?
I don't think he got, no. That's way too close.
I think it's right now.
He's been there for longer. I think he got nicked right at the edge of the ear, no different than if Tyson went up to hug him.
Okay.
Tyson likes to bite ears off a little bit.
Now, here are some skeptics. Mike Stone forgive Trump his fakery. After years of fake school shooting, fake mail-in ballot, two fake elections, a fake pandemic, and a fake vaccine, I see no harm in a fake shooting designed to win Donald Trump the presidency. Do you? If our choice for president is 4 more years of an imposter pretending to be Joe Biden, or 4 more years of Donald Trump, all take Trump. Would you rather Trump play fair and lose the election? Because the other side is never going to play fair. The other side stole the last 2 elections, staged a fake pandemic, duped millions into taking a deadly vax. The other side, along with their followers, is completely unhinged. They would kill Trump, his entire family, and all his supporters if they could. So what's wrong with fighting fire with fire, or put it more accurately, fighting fakery with fakery? Do you know a single brain-dead Democrat who feels even the slightest remorse over the last 2 stolen elections? Of course you don't. They are incapable of remorse. If you don't believe me, ask your Democrat friends and family members if they feel bad about the stolen presidential election of 2020 or the stolen midterm of 2022. You don't have to tell me how they'll respond. I already know. If they feel no remorse over the crooked details of their political leaders, why should you feel remorse over Donald Trump giving them a taste of their own medicine? And when Trump wins in November, you should openly gloat about it and rub it in as much as you can. Man, if they hadn't tried to kill Trump, he never would have won. What a lucky break that was. And to think some people actually thought that shooting was fake. Go ahead, do it. Have a little fun for a change. For those of you still teetering on the fence about whether this event was real or fake, consider this. The assassination attempt of Trump fit 7 of my 12 telltale signs of a fake shooting. The 7 signs we see? No blood, no bodies, no surveillance video, GoFundMe account set up within 24 hours, nonstop media coverage, evidence immediately destroyed, the immediate alleged perpetrator immediately caught or killed, multiple shooters, principals involved, current or former actors. He begins talking. No blood, no bodies, no surveillance video, no photographic evidence. Corey Capitore was killed. Have you seen his bloody corpse? No, I haven't. He's supposed to be a volunteer fire chief for Buffalo Township Fire Company 27, but did you see the memorial they set up at his own fire station? They spelled his name wrong. They did it again at the Republican National Convention. Was it because the Buffalo Township Fire Country never heard of the guy, or was it a subtle tell to those in the know? They do that, you know. They're out a little sign to rub in people's faces. Why do you think that video of a smirking Robbie Parker was leaked to the public? It wasn't by accident. GoFundMe accounts up with 24 hours, nonstop media coverage. Evidence immediately destroyed. Police have already hosed down the roof of the building where the alleged shooter was said to be, along with the roof where the counter-striper was. The alleged perpetrator immediately got or killed. Multiple shooters, principals, current or former actors. Donald Trump is an actor and a pretty good one. Did you forget about that? I can't leave without warning, even with Trump in the White House, nothing's going to change. People are too mired in sin, too intent on damning their souls to hell for anything substantial to change. And what in the world is going on with the Republican Party? As Andrew Englund put after watching the convention, it's strippers, it's homos, it's foreign religious rituals, it's fake ear bandages, it's believing stupid shooting hoaxes, it's calling for mass immigration from India. It's endless wars with Israel's enemies. I will say this. Kai Trump did a good job of humanizing your grandfather. Now, PK down from Australia has done a video about a couple of the members here. He's actually gone through the whole crowd to make the case these are crisis actors. The key are these couple of, in this very first preliminary, these couple of women are looking at their cell phones for instructions of what to do, and one rather than filming Trump. And this one looks at her cell phone, and then she crosses herself. This one looks at her cell phone, and then she crosses herself. He suggests that's not by accident. And get this, we have a whole video about prior reports about the shooting before it even occurred, including in the Times of Israel, leading a number of us to suggest that this looks like it just might be a staged event. Now, John, I'll go over your comments first, and then James.
Well, I don't think the shooter, the decoy shooter, thinks it's a staged event. I don't think the other guys that got hit and killed, they just released one of the other people that was wounded out of the hospital, I believe, yesterday. We want to know what the rounds look like. Were they 22 long rifle, which I believe they were, and we need actual information on the ballistics of what they recovered. If they go to the extent of claiming it was a 223, we are involved, or they are involved, in a major cover-up. And the fact that he got hit, I believe he got hit, he got nipped on the ear. If he'd have got closer, it would have got too close to the head. That's really cutting it, and you can't cover up a hole. That's going to cause some serious surgery and some other type of preparation. As you can see, he's back on his feet again, and he doesn't wear the bandage right now. So I think it was just a nicked ear. But I want you to make sure you send me that picture, that aerial photo, because that's critical, because a lot of people haven't done it. And the actual Secret Service interviews with the people on top of the roof, I've watched it carefully because I got the video yesterday from another source, and it describes what the guy had. Because if you line it up on the railings of the top of the roof where he's bleeded out already, because he's already got hit a headshot.
We'll be right back with James Perloff and John Carman. Stand by.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio, 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 Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
James, before we turn to your new book, would you care to make any comments at all about this?
Sure. First of all, I would defer to John's expertise as ex-Secret Service on this matter. You know, I've had a lot of attention on the launch of my new book, so I've only been following this relatively superficially. But a few points that I've noted in the course of this. One is that just 2 days after the assassination, somebody directed me to a BitChute video by someone named Jim Crenshaw. I'm not a follower of hers, but I see he has 80,000 followers. And in this video, he pointed out that the sounds you hear three shots, at least three shots. And as the camera is focused on the SWAT team guy who's firing at Crooks, who's clearly a patsy, no matter what your scenario is, Crooks is obviously a patsy. The sound of the shots corresponds exactly with the recoil of that shooter, that SWAT team shooter. Now, that raises the question of what shots, if any, were fired at Trump. And my suspicion would be that there were shots fired in his direction. And I think that John has made an excellent point that as opposed to the water tower, it would probably be coming from the windows that were beneath Crooks, because that would give you approximately the right trajectory as opposed to the water tower if an investigation of any integrity was to be conducted. A lot of points have been made about this, and I'm sure you're familiar with many of them. I'm sure you know that Senator Josh Hawley has pointed out that a lot of the security were not experienced Secret Service, but were relatively inexperienced people from Homeland Security. Thomas Crooks appeared in a BlackRock commercial twice, which is pretty unusual. This kid has supposedly picked up a 5-foot ladder from Home Depot on the way there, but the ladder he used was much taller than 5 feet. That's suspicious, along with the fact that there seems to be substantial evidence that the Secret Service or security there knew about Crooks but did nothing about him until the moment of the attempted assassination. Now, the Secret Security chief has said that they couldn't put Secret Service on the roof because sloping too much. But if you look at the pictures of the alleged body of Crooks, he's almost flat. It's about a 4-degree angle, and that doesn't really make a lot of sense. Another little, you know, factoid that goes along with this is it occurred on the same day as the cremation of care ceremony at Bohemian Grove. Whether or not that is significant or not, I don't know. But also, Jim, you've been talking about the iconic photographs. You know, when Trump raises his fist, he said at the Republican convention that his hand was covered in blood. But when you see him raise his fist, it's not covered in blood. And the picture just happens to catch the American flag there. That seems like quite a symbolic photo. Maybe it's, you know, some people would say it's God's providence, but other people say it's been staged. Along with that, there was a camera that actually caught the bullet as it whizzed past Trump's head, one of the bullets. And given shutter speed, it seems unlikely with frames per second that you could have actually caught the bullet. It just seems a little artificial. But there are takes that this was an attempted assassination with of Trump, with Crooks being the dummy, and that would not be an unusual scenario. As John has pointed out, he's immediately killed, so he can't be questioned. And this has happened before with alleged assassins of political figures. And the third interpretation I've heard of this is that this could have been some kind of a warning to Trump that this is what we can do to you if you don't, if we let you be president and you don't follow our instructions, you will be taken out next time. That may have some credibility to it. I don't know. It's interesting. He picked J.D. Vance to be his vice president 2 days after this incident. And Vance seems to be a swamp creature. And of course, it's the swamp that Trump has been pledging to take out all along. So three interpretations, a real attempt that missed, a publicity stunt by Trump or a warning to Trump. Those are the three narratives I've heard, but I don't have the expertise, and we haven't had enough time, I think, to truly analyze it and be sure.
I like all that, James. I think that's excellent. I think that photograph of the bullet is ridiculous. And the iconic photo is a little too iconic. I've been told that Trump was missing in action for 10 days, suggesting he could have been rehearsing the script here.
Right. I heard that too.
I'm very skeptical about what's going on here, but it had the effect politically of solidifying him in the swing states and, consolidated all his mega supporters. I mean, the guy has virtually attained a superhero status. John, your further thoughts.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember all the points. Those are all good points. I'm going to try to go back from the most recent, which would be the camera question. The problem with cameras, and I've been a photographer since I was a kid, since 13, I had a camera. I went to Japan. I had a Minolta. I later got a Minolta spy camera and all that. So I know about frames. We no longer live in the world of regular film and cameras anymore. Now we have digital. Now I've got a security camera here. It's a flip phone, but the megapixels is like what, five or something. I've seen people with high speed film and thermal imaging can take pictures of UFOs when they slow it down because they saw something go right past. And all you see is a blur. Then they had downloaded it to a computer and then they could figure out they just saw a UFO, which will slow it down to, and then slow it down some more and more. You know, frame by frame by frame, even the beat of a bumblebee or a bee. So if they could do that technology, they can see a picture of what I think is probably the left to right transfer of a bullet that missed Trump. That's not a problem for me. I can accept that because that's where the direction of travel is from. I'm telling you guys firsthand, this is the first interview I've done, which I'm exposing a part about the windows. They don't want anybody to talk about the windows. And I've already reached out to various congressmen's offices that have not reached back to me yet. And I was on Fox News on the 13th. But the tower is a decoy. They shot the decoy shooter. They could have had another one in the parking lot, another one in the car. And he also had a device no different than a garage door opener. I'm just using that as a prop, a garage door opener. And he also had what looked like a cell phone nearby, a smartphone, not a flip phone. And he had a bag of material, and he also had a bag of ammo, which is a go bag for police and law enforcement that even I used to carry. So I've looked at all these items, and it all matches up. That's the lone male shooter, Crooks or Yurik, doesn't matter. And they don't want you to see the three windows off to the left of that same building in the rear. That's where the shooter's from. And then
Let
he
me
had
just
law
say
enforcement too.
that Mayorkas telling this head of the Secret Service to keep her mouth shut about what happened certainly
Kimberly
consciousness
Cheadle, yes.
of guilt. She was totally evasive and made absurd replies to questions from Congress
Exactly.
suggests they were complicit. We've
No,
got
I
the
agree with you. She was totally evasive. She wouldn't answer straight questions.
story. Excuse
Bless
me.
you.
I've been sneezing a bit. Plus, they had three different ops going on in Pennsylvania. Jill had four times as many Secret Services they gave to Trump, and Kamala was there too, apparently, with her entourage. So it looks like they were setting it up to excuse, what had happened there because they were stretched so thin. It was just inadvertent. We're really sorry Trump got whacked. I do think it was 22 long rifle. I fired those my before. They're very effective. You hit the head of the 22 long rifle, you're going to be dead, and the bullet's going to bounce around inside your cranium, I suspect. John.
Well, let me explain also. I'm glad you brought that up because I have other people I talk to who have military background, at least two other people with military where they actually trained with 22 long rifle in an M16 or an assault rifle weapon. Let me point out that when we used ammunition, it was subsonic. 9 millimeter subsonic. Why is that, John? Well, because maybe somebody might want to attach a flash suppressor a silencer on it. You can't measure sound from a silenced bullet. You can't measure it. So you got other people, I won't mention names, talking recently where they stretch it out to an hour deal, which is just totally a waste of time. But they do have three registered sound cracks. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. That's the actual noise of the slide going back and forth. That's no less than a 22 long rifle, not a 223, which is a gigantic, powerful 22 that's going to make a bigger explosion. But I want to reemphasize, this is the hottest information I'm giving you guys because nobody else has interviewed me about the flash suppressor. Because if a guy fired a silenced weapon from the window, that's what's happening. Now I'm getting calls.
Well, in Dealey Plaza, there was only one unsilenced weapon, and there were, by my count, eight altogether, but only one was a silenced, create the acoustical impression of only three shots having been fired. So I think this is extremely valuable, like the discussion. See, some suggest Trump actually deserves an Academy Award for this. Right? I love it. I did a discussion just a couple of days ago with Victor Hugo and Joaquin Egobian. Really, we were all pretty much inclined to think this had been a stage event. So anyone who wants to check out more, you can find that on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer, or on my Twitter account, at Jim Fetzer. Just check it out. I love this because it's going to generate interest in a whole lot of false flags. Now we turn to James' latest about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Here's an early drawing of John Wilkes Booth taking him out in Ford's theater.
That's the wrong handgun that he used, but go ahead.
Yeah. James, you're welcome. I just pulled this off to illustrate because here you have your book, Exploding the Official Myths of the Lincoln Assassination. Like many major historical events, Abraham Lincoln's assassination had an official story and a backstory. On April 14, 1865, the president was shot by actor John Wilkes Booth, a Southern sympathizer at Ford Theater in Washington. Simultaneously, a Booth accomplice, Lewis Powell, attempted to stab to death William Stuart, the Secretary of State, at his home. Though not expected to live, Stuart survived his wounds. Booth and another accomplice, David Harold, rode south. On April 26, Union cavalry tracked a pair to a Virginia barn. Harold surrendered. Booth refused. Despite orders to bring him back alive, Booth was mortally wounded by a soldier who fired through an opening in the barn afterwards. A military court tried eight alleged Booth accomplices. Four were hanged, including Mary Surratt, the first woman executed by the United States. And here's the gallows where they're hung. So ends the official story in a nutshell, which is all most people know. Due to media control plus removal of critical documents from government archives, James Perloff dismantles the story in his new book, thanks to the digitization of handwritten 19th century documents, and with help from two intrepid predecessors, one alive, the other dead more than 60 years. Readers may be surprised at how much 1860s America resembled today's America, with a deep state behind the scene, controlled information, suppression of civil liberties, and secret agendas. Among the book's questions, some answering, some just asking, why on a dishonest pretext did Secretary of War Edwin Stanton deny Lincoln the protection he requested at Ford Theater? Why was Lincoln assigned a disreputable bodyguard who deserted his post before the assassination, yet was never punished? How did John Wilkes Booth know he only needed a one-shot derringer to kill the president? Why were the only actual assassination attempt by Booth and accomplices against the only two prominent men in the administration, Lincoln and Seward, who opposed the brutal Reconstruction plan devised for the South? How was the Ford Theater presidential box modified to facilitate the murder? Why did Washington telegraph wires shut down after the assassination? Why did War Secretary Stanton take charge of the investigation and intended the Attorney General? Why was Booth's escape road the only left unpatrolled? What did Booth tell Southerners his real reason for leaving a card at Vice President Johnson's residence the day of the assassination? Secretary Seward's attempted assassin, Lewis Powell, gained access by pretending to deliver medicine. How did he know the doctor's name and the house's exact layout? Why were soldiers closest to capturing Booth replaced by a select Washington detachment, including two commanders who were trusted associates of Stanton's right-hand man, Lafayette Baker? Why was the court-martial of the sergeant who, against orders, allegedly shot Booth canceled? Why was Booth's diary, recovered from his body, never entered in evidence at the conspiracy trial, kept secret for 2 years, and when finally exposed, 43 sheets of the 86 pages were missing? Why were Booth's alleged accomplices denied a jury trial and prompt defense counsel? Why were they continuously shackled, heads hooded, before being either hanged or sent to a remote island prison west of Key West? What close friend of Booth were also old friends with Stanton's intelligence chief, William Wood? I gotta say, James, those are wonderful questions, and I'm just impressed with what you're doing here. Give us your thoughts. Where do we go? Tell us more about your findings. We're eager to hear.
Well, first of all, I'm very impressed that you read that list. You kind of saved me a lot of work. Those are points I usually go through. But, we might mention something that I didn't mention there, which was a General Grant. The South had just surrendered, Robert E. Lee had surrendered just 5 days before the assassination. That effectively ended the Civil War, even though there were still a few Confederate forces on the field. A lot of celebrating in the North. And General Grant was in Washington. He was supposed to go to Ford's Theater that night with President Lincoln and their wives to attend that play called Our American Cousin. But at the last moment, Grant canceled out. And so President Lincoln had to find replacements. And that included Major Henry Rathbone and his fiancée. Clara Harris was the daughter of a senator from New York. They sat in the booth, the presidential box, I should say, with the Lincolns. Now, why did future President Grant, now General Ulysses S. Grant, cancel out? Now, what he told Lincoln was that he wanted to see his family in New Jersey, but this doesn't really make any sense. He was on the train to New Jersey when Lincoln was shot, but there was no urgency about his going to see his family. Nobody was sick. Nobody was about to get married. He could have just as easily accepted an invitation from his commander-in-chief and then taken the morning train, but he decided not to. And as you read my book, you can see that the mainstream historians have a spin on every aspect of this assassination. And what they say about Grant cancellation is that his wife, Julia, didn't get along with Mary Todd Lincoln, and she pressured her husband not to go. That doesn't really make sense because all they're being asked to do is sit in full view of the public at Ford's Theater. That's not going to result in a cat fight between the two wives. The real reason that Grant canceled out that day has to do with Secretary of War Edwin Stanton, who is representing in the cabinet what they call the radical Republicans who want to brutalize the South after the war. Grant went to the War Department that day, and he was told by Edwin Stanton, the Secretary of War, don't go to Ford's Theater tonight. There could be real danger. That's why he canceled out. But in contrast to that is Stanton's attitude towards Lincoln. And I want to read to you what Lincoln's daytime bodyguard, William Crook, said on the day of the assassination, April the 14th. In his memoirs, he wrote this, he quote, "I was surprised late on the afternoon of the 14th, I accompanied Mr. Lincoln on a hurried visit to the War Department. I found that the president was more depressed than I'd ever seen him, and his step was unusually slow. Mr. Lincoln said to me, 'Crook, you know, I believe there are men who want to take my life.' Then after a pause, he said, 'I have no doubt that they will do it.' The conviction with which he spoke dismayed me. I wanted to protest, but his tone had been so calm and sure, I found myself saying instead, 'Why do you think so, Mr. President? Other men have been assassinated,' was his reply. All I could say was, 'I hope you're mistaken, Mr. President.'" Now, Crook stands outside the War Department where Lincoln goes into the War Department. What's his purpose for going there? He wants a competent bodyguard. Crooks is going off duty. He wants a competent bodyguard to go with him to Ford's Theater. He goes in, he speaks to Stanton, and Stanton advises him not to go to Ford's Theater, but not with the same conviction he told Grant. Now, Lincoln says, I have to go. The public's expecting me. It's been announced. He says, I want a competent man to escort me. I want your assistant, Major Eckert. I know how strong he is. I've seen him break iron pokers over his arm. And Stanton says, sorry, President Lincoln, but we're going to be very busy tonight in the War Department. I need Major Eckert here for his services. We're going to be very busy. Lincoln didn't accept it. He went straight to Major Eckert's desk. And Major Eckert was in charge of the cipher desk, meaning the telegraph desk. And Lincoln says, Major Eckert, would you please accompany me to Ford's Theater tonight? I know how strong you are. And Eckert says, sorry, Mr. President, I've got too much of a workload tonight. And Lincoln says, well, surely, Major, your work could wait till the morning. Eckert says, no, sir, got to be done tonight. And I just want to point out, it's very unusual for a major in the U.S. Army to refuse a request from his commander-in-chief, the President of the United States. But Lincoln accepted and said, okay, I'll take Major Rathbone instead. Now, what you need to know is that both Eckert and Stanton are lying to Lincoln. They are not busy in the War Department that night. They were not even in the War Department tonight. No telegraph message was sent out by Eckert from the telegraph desk. He signed it off to his assistant, Major Homer Bates, who were getting this information from. Bates wrote about it in the memoirs. Stanton went home. He wasn't in the War Department. They're lying to Lincoln. Now, again, the mainstream historians always have a spin, and they, what they'll tell you is, well, Eckert and Stanton are so concerned about Lincoln's safety, they figured if they denied him the bodyguard he wanted, that he changed his mind about going to Ford's Theater. But he didn't. Right in front of them, he said, well, I'm still going to Ford's Theater with Major Rathbone. If they're really concerned about the president's safety, why did they change their mind and say, okay, I guess we could spare Major Eckert to be your bodyguard tonight? But they were lying. And what I also want to talk about is who was Lincoln's bodyguard that night. And this is really critical. It's a man whose name has been virtually erased from history. Lincoln's bodyguard at Ford's Theater was John F. Parker. John F. Parker was a member of the Washington Metropolitan Police. He was one of four members of that police force assigned to the presidential bodyguard detail. Now, he had a lousy record as a police officer. He'd been charged with misconduct many times for being drunk on duty, asleep on duty, visiting a brothel, using foul language, but always the charges were dropped. Somehow he winds up on Lincoln's bodyguard detail. And what you need to know is that he deserted his post that night. He was initially stationed in a chair on the outside of the presidential box behind a closed door, but he left his post and he went next door to what they call the Star Saloon next to Ford's Theater, boozed it up. He was not at his post when Lincoln was shot. And he was not seen again until 6 o'clock the following morning. 6 o'clock the following morning, in an apparent attempt, a pathetic attempt to redeem himself, he came into police headquarters with a prostitute and charged her with being a lady of the streets. We can imagine what the reaction of the police was. We don't care. The president has been shot. We're trying to find his assassins. They didn't charge the woman with prostitution. And some people believe he actually spent the night with a prostitute. We can't prove that, but there's reasons to believe it. Number one, he was known to frequent houses of prostitution. Number two, why is he bringing this woman at 6 o'clock in the morning? You're not going to see a prostitute at 5 in the morning playing her trade. Plus, the streets were filled with lynch mobs. There was pandemonium. People were threatening to burn down Ford's Theater. Very unlikely that a prostitute's going to be out plying her trade in that kind of an atmosphere. In any event, I want to quote what William Crook, the daytime bodyguard, wrote about John F. Parker in his memoirs. He said that Crook should have been at the rear of the presidential box, quote, fully armed and to permit no unauthorized person to pass. Incredible as it may seem, he quietly deserted his post of duty. It was through this guard's amazing recklessness, to use no stronger words, that Booth accomplished his foul deed, end quote. Now, you would think that Parker would have been punished for this. He let the president be assassinated. He would have gone to jail, lost his job. But no, he didn't go to jail. He wasn't dismissed from the Washington police. And even remained on the presidential bodyguard detail after letting President Lincoln be assassinated. When Mary Todd Lincoln saw him at the White House still, she said, you're responsible for my husband's murder. Now, she was a high-strung woman. People know that. But she was right. And now, the Washington police did conduct an investigation of this matter, but all the records have disappeared. It obviously took somebody with a lot of clout to get this guy off the hook and have no punishment. By the way, I should mention, he showed up for work three hours late that day, and I don't think it was just due to his habitual laziness. But to keep the President of the United States waiting for 3 hours for you to show up, after Crook went home. I mean, there's so many, and this guy's been erased from history. I have a 1,400-page book of files on the Lincoln assassination from that time, the War Department, the Police Department. John F. Parker's name is mentioned once in a footnote. That's it. He's gone from history. He was not called to testify at the trial, nor was his name ever mentioned. This is just one small detail of the Lincoln assassination, and there are dozens in my book.
David, I love this. I love this. Yeah, John, go for it.
Well, I just had a quick question or two. We're talking about the War Department. Is that the same building that's the EOB next door to the White House? War
Department? It was next to the White House. That's correct.
Okay. People need to understand that's a gigantic gray building, kind of dismal. And I've worked there too. I've been all over that place. So that all this stuff is walking distance, and they still have prostitutes of the evening or afternoon or morning on 14th Street. And we had our Secret Service building off 1310L. And I could tell you other stories about that stuff too. What happened to Pinkerton after the war thing? Pinkerton was the one that was first, allegedly one of the most famous people who was assigned to protection of Lincoln. I don't know if you knew much about that part. I sent you a chat message real quick to both of you that I actually saw the actual medical devices that were by the Army. And they were showing them around. I said, oh, my God, there's the actual devices and the medical instruments and a whalebone probe that they actually used on Lincoln when they were trying to find the bullet, which is a 41 caliber Derringer.
John, hold that thought. We'll be right back with James Perloff and John Carman talking about James' new book on the Lincoln assassination. Fascinating stuff.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. Time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice. anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
John, continue with your thoughts, please.
I almost thought I forgot my thoughts for a second. I think I was talking about Pinkerton was the one that was originally a private investigator, and then from that they started having the other bodyguards, and I'm listening very good. Me and James will have a conversation after the show sometime, I'm sure.
Because would this be the origin of what it would become the Secret Service and out of the Pinkertons?
Well, yeah, what I wanted to point out was eventually when they went from the certain military people, and you already indicated that there was a Washington, D.C. police officer. Well, it just so happened, even when I was there in 1974, Nixon had just left. They previously had Washington, D.C. police as White House police detail, which turned into Executive Protective Service / Uniform Division, which was still Secret Service in 74. Prior to that, I mean, we're talking about way back in the 50s, and even the attempt on the president's life back when Truman left the White House because they were doing repairs to the White House. They had a Puerto Rican terrorist group try to assassinate him at Blair House right across the street, which would be technically from the Executive Avenue, and you would see the War Department or the Executive Office Building, actually also named the Eisenhower Building. Same thing. They killed the assassins, but the Kofelt was killed, and there's a plaque out there in front of Blair House, and the new Executive Office Building is above it, where the counter-snipers also position themselves whenever the Marine One comes in. But eventually, the whole thing was, they eventually progressed and turned into the Secret Service Uniform Division. Secret Service was established since 1865, mostly out of the counterfeiting issues, which I'm sure James could get into as well. I'm sure that we would really like to hear about the stuff on John Wilkes Booth, because there's a lot of interesting things going on with that.
Well, my inference from what James has articulated is the Secretary of War was behind the assassination. He may have had financial sponsors. James, please do elaborate. It's pretty obvious. And my guess would be the stabbing would be just a cover-up. It probably was relatively innocuous. They exaggerated it in the press to make it look as though it were serious. But that's my guess. James, please.
When you talk about the stabbing, are you talking about the stabbing of Major Henry Rathbone?
No. I mean, Lytton Stoughton actually stabbed himself to the Secretary of War.
Oh, you mean when he died? There was rumors about that, if that's what you're referring to. Although some people say he had family and peers at his deathbed and that he didn't do that. I don't think there's anything definitive on that.
Well, that was Seward. Yeah, and of
Oh,
course,
I'm
when
sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, Secretary of Seward was
my
definitely stabbed. Yeah, I'm
mistake,
sorry. I'm
it
sorry. I
was
misunderstood. Yeah.
no, it was my inference is your research substantiates that Stanton was behind the assassination, or at least a key player in setting up Lincoln for his death.
Definitely. Well, he first of all, he's the one who lied to Lincoln the day of the assassination. But another thing to remember about Stanton is that he took charge, put himself completely in charge of the investigation of Lincoln's death. Now, normally, this would have come under the Attorney General. This is like today, if there was a presidential assassination, it would come under the Justice Department, not under the Department of Defense, which is what the War Department became. But
Well,
as
there are
the
further evidence of guilt. I mean, he wanted to control the investigation lest he be out. I mean, I think
Yeah.
that's.
It's indirect evidence, but it's one of many, many pieces that point to him.
Yeah.
And I want to mention now, in case anybody thinks he was an old softy and that's why he didn't punch the bodyguard, he was a ruthless man. And during the Civil War, if a soldier was caught falling asleep on guard duty and was sentenced to death by court martial, Lincoln might write up, a reprieve at the request of the family, and Stanton would rip it up. I mean, he just signed countless death warrants. He was known as a ruthless man. But I just want to compare the treatment of the bodyguard to the treatment of an employee at Ford's Theater. I do this in my book as an example. There was a Ford employee named Ned Spangler, and he worked as a carpenter, and he worked as a scenery shifter, meaning between acts, while the curtain was down, he'd help move the scenery for the next act. And he was one of the big eight that was tried, at the trial of the conspirators. Four people were hung, including Mary Surratt, and four were sentenced to hard labor. He was one of those who went to hard labor. Now, what was his crime? His crime was this: on the day of the assassination, John Wilkes Booth that night came up behind the theater on a rented horse, was not his own horse. And the stable owner named John Pumphrey told Booth, he said, "Look, watch out for this horse. It's very high spirited. It could break away on you." So Booth wanted to make sure that horse was ready for him when he got out of the theater. He's going to have to make a be, you know, a very fast escape. So he knows that Ned Spangler, but not as a co-assassin. He's often performed at Ford Theater, John Wilkes Booth. Even Lincoln saw him perform there. And so Spangler knew him on a professional basis. That's all. And so Booth said, "Hey, Spangler, would you hold my horse for me? I want to go into the theater for a couple of minutes." Now, Spangler doesn't know he's about to kill the president, but he holds the horse. But times are wasting, and he has to get back into the theater to start shifting scenery. So he tells a fellow employee named Joseph Burroughs, "Hey, Joseph, would you hold the horse for Mr. Booth? I have to get back to the theater." Well, that's it. That's the extent of his proven crime. That's been proven, okay? No proof that he ever discussed assassinating the president with Booth or that he knew any of Booth's accomplices. But for this, Secretary of War Stanton orders him to be arrested. He's placed in solitary confinement, like the other prisoners, except for Mary Surratt. A canvas bag is placed over his head. You can't see with it on. You can barely hear. There's one small hole for breathing and eating. His hands are handcuffed, and his legs are manacled with an 8-inch chain. And these are on at all times. The bag doesn't even come off his head for eating. Now, the guards, he has two guards on him. It's true for all the prisoners. They're all in solitary confinement. And the guards are forbidden to speak to him, but they take pity on him at mealtime. So he can't have the hood off, but they feed him through the hole. Well, one guard will feed him, while
Chest.
the other one stands guard on watch in case they get caught doing this. Now,
Inhumane. This is outrageous.
this is a violation of the eighth plank of the Bill of Rights, which says you cannot use cruel or unusual punishment. And by the way, these bags were invented by Stanton, and they had to wear them all up to the time of the trial and during the trial, except when they were in the courtroom, when they were still manacled, but they had the hoods off. And this guy, Spangler, got the lightest sentence of anyone. Like I say, four were hanged, three, including Dr. Samuel Mudd, who made a cast for homemade cast for Booth. He broke his leg when he jumped onto the stage and shouted what he shouted. The leg was killing him. So he went to Dr. Mudd's home in Maryland because he slightly knew Dr. Mudd. He got life in prison. That was commuted later by Andrew Johnson, but he got life imprisonment. Spangler got 6 years, and that was the lightest sentence. But that's for just briefly, briefly holding Booth's horse. He wasn't even holding it when Booth came out of the theater. This is just the contrast. And you'll see throughout the Lincoln assassination annals, this happens, where people who are guilty go scot-free. People who have nothing to do with assassination get hung or sentenced.
But that was the plan.
President hard labor.
Signed by Stanton to make a big public splash as though he really was being ruthless on the conspirators when he was just patching it together to excuse those who really committed the crime and make it appear as though he were punishing who were actually innocent as though they were guilty. I mean, I think you've done a wonderful job, James. I'm just fascinated by this whole thing. Tell us more.
Okay. By the way, I've got to credit Otto Eisenschimmel, who first woke me up to this. He wrote a book in 1937. I know our listeners can't hear, but our viewers can. Otto Eisenschimmel wrote a book called Why Was Lincoln Murdered in 1937. He followed it up with another book in 1940. And also a top researcher. Most people have never heard of him, but his name is Don Thomas. And I've had at least 50 phone call conversations, many emails exchanged while I was writing this book. And he's an outstanding researcher. He directed me to many digitized resources that at one time you had to go through microfilm in order to see it. But anyway, getting back to the Lincoln assassination details, what weapons, again, did Booth bring into the presidential box? A one-shot Derringer and a knife. Now, why was Booth so sure he only needed one bullet to take care of the president? I mean, if there had been a competent bodyguard like William Crook at his post, Booth probably would have had to use that one bullet on the bodyguard, and that leaves him with only a knife. And he has to get through Major Rathbone, who grappled with Booth on the night of assassination before he jumped on this stage. And then to try and stab Lincoln to death with a knife. Lincoln's 6'4", he's very strong, used to be a rail splitter. Booth is only 5'8". The conclusion I draw from this, okay, and it can't be proven, although there are hints that point to it, that Booth knew there would be no bodyguard there, that the bodyguard was not going to be there. And that was one of the reasons that he knew he only needed one bullet to use against Lincoln. Now, for people to say, no, it's impossible that Booth had inside information, I'm going to prove to you he had inside information. Let's talk about the assassination of Seward. Again, the assassin, his name was Lewis Powell, got into the home. He said, I'm here from the pharmacy. She showed a little package. I'm here with medicine from Dr. Verity. Dr. Verity was Seward's MD. Seward had been bedridden due to a carriage accident. Now, the servant was distrustful. He said, I'll take the medicine up to the secretaries. And Powell said, no, I got to deliver it myself. He knew exactly where the stairs were. He knew exactly where Seward's bedroom was on the third floor. He had inside information. And this operates throughout the whole Lincoln assassination. It's not just some plot dreamed up by John Wilkes Booth. He's got information from the inside telling him what to do and how to do it.
Fascinating. I love it. John, your thoughts? John,
I had my mic muted. I get it. I was discussing this case recently with another friend of mine, and we were kind of joking. Why did he use a small Derringer or single shot weapon? I said, well, it's probably because he had his dirty, hairy 44 Magnum in the shop, or he couldn't carry a 357. But back in those days, they did have, during the Civil War, 6-round pistols and so forth. So what I'm going to tell you from my Secret Service background is concealability. That's the whole point of it. Nowadays, you can get a 2-shot Magnum, 22 Magnum Derringer. I've carried one when I was a police officer as a backup weapon. Those are horrendous. One shot is enough. It will make an explosion, a noise that you wouldn't believe. But I believe it was a 41 caliber ball type pistol. Had to be loaded, that sort of thing. The one they show in the diagram, it's kind of confusing because I'm very particular about, well, that looks like a handgun, but it looks like a semi-automatic, or it looks like a revolver, 5-shot, 6-shot, chief special or something. But it's all about concealability, and then the dagger is a backup weapon. But if he knew he had access, one shot, get out quick, and also the idea is to be able to escape. Concealability, the quickness of the firing, or the assassin's attack, and then being able to escape. unless he's going to just fire off a bunch of shots, then he's causing a lot of attention, and then other people might respond and all that. It's one shot, get in, get out. That's my thinking. So, but then it didn't happen that way, I guess, because he ended up jumping off of the booth. I'm sorry, box. We're doing that Freudian slip thing onto the stage, and he yelled out something. Can you remember, James, what the actual?
Oh, sure. He yelled "Sic Semper Tyrannis," thus always the Terence. Yeah. The state motto of Virginia, and the South is avenged. By the way, I just want to acknowledge what you're saying. And I do talk about this in my book, that a derringer is easier to conceal than a revolver. But I really believe that Booth, had he worn a coat, it was an evening, he could have concealed in a deep pocket a revolver if he wanted to.
Sure.
I don't think he had to rely on that one-shot pistol. And he was certainly taking a big chance. If a competent bodyguard had been there, it would have been a real problem for him.
Yeah, and it's usually so they can throw it away, a throwaway. Mm-hmm.
Which he did. Exactly. The derringer was found afterwards. Yeah, he didn't have it on him when he fled the theater.
There you go. That's a profile.
Anyway, just to pick up further on this, let's see, because we got plenty of time. Booth's selection of targets is very interesting. After Lincoln's assassination, something called Reconstruction, I'm sure you guys know, was imposed on the South. It was very brutal. The South had already had its infrastructure decimated by Sherman and other generals. They'd lost their food. They had cities, whole cities were burned down, Atlanta, Savannah. The South was at the mercy of the North at the end of the war. And they were exploited after the war. Onerous taxation was placed on properties. You can see that in the movie, The Gone with the Wind. Properties were taken over by carpetbaggers. Businesses were lost. And they were under military occupation for 12 years. They were not allowed to elect their own governors. They said the War Department would appoint military governors instead. And this is one reason why there was always a lot of bitterness in the South towards the North. They were so brutally treated. Now, Lincoln stood against this in his second inaugural address in 1864. He elected in 1864, reelected. He said, malice towards none, charity towards all. He wanted property returned to Southerners. He wanted Southern states to be returned to the Congress, their representatives and senators, which the radical Republicans, who Stanton represented, knew that would mean the end of their power and the deep state who they represented. They would be outvoted by the combination of Northern and Southern Democrats. And they, I'll show you a real contrast. In the South, they condemned the assassination of Lincoln. Jefferson Davis said, quote, "It will be disastrous for our people." Robert E. Lee condemned it. Virginia newspapers called Booth a scoundrel. And back in the 90s, I read a book. I went back to reread it for writing this new book of mine. It's called A Confederate Girl's Diary, written down in Louisiana, 440 pages long. Her closing words of the 440 pages was, "Our Confederacy has gone with one crash, the report of the pistol fired at Lincoln," end quote. Everybody in the South seemed to know that Lincoln's death would be a disaster for the South. Number one, because it meant the radical Republicans' plan for Reconstruction would now be imposed. And number two, they were going to be blamed for the assassination. Now, there's just one man in Lincoln's cabinet, one prominent man who stood with Lincoln, that the South should be treated gently and without retribution. And that was Secretary Seward, the only other man when actual assassination attempt was made that night. Now, there were alleged other assassination attempts against Vice President Johnson, General Grant, Secretary Stanton himself. I have a whole chapter called Alleged Other Botched Assassination Attempts. But the only two people who really they went after were the two people who stood in the way of Reconstruction. I don't think that's a coincidence. And before I throw it back to you guys, I just want to read a quote from Radical Congressman George Julian. He said this in his diary. He wrote this on April the 15th. Lincoln died on the morning of the 15th at 7:22. So Lincoln's body probably isn't even cold. There was a political caucus of radical Republicans. These are not the Republicans of today, by the way. These are not Ron Paul type guys. These people are pro-Marxists. They're anti-constitutionalists. The Republican and Democrat parties of today don't resemble the parties of those days. But here's what he wrote in his diary. He attended a caucus. He said, quote, "I like the radicalism of the members of this caucus, but if not for a long time heard such profanity, it became disgusting. Their hostility towards Lincoln's policy of conciliation and contempt for his weakness were undisguised. And the universal feeling among radical men here is that his death is a godsend. It really seems so. For among the last acts of his official life was an invitation to some of the chief rebel conspirators to meet in Richmond and confer with us on the subject of peace, end quote. Radical Republican Congressman George Julian. So in the South, they're mourning Lincoln's death, not to say that they like Lincoln. He had been a dictator. He had arrested people without warrant. He supported the habeas corpus suspension act. He closed down newspapers that disagree with him. He was a tyrant in many ways, but he was a lesser evil compared to these other men involved. So just an indication, the South had nothing to gain from Lincoln's death, even though there are mainstream historians now trying to put the blame in the South without any positive proof. It was the radical Republicans who wanted to keep their power and to impose this economic exploitation of the South that were, as Congressman Julian put it, thought Lincoln's death was a godsend. I'll throw it back to you, and we'll get to more forensics.
Fascinating. John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was off camera for just a little bit there. I lost my 80 tabs on my thing, so they're trying to break into my system. I'm listening carefully as best I can. Do you remember that? Remember, I watched a couple of movies that really tied into some of the time frames, which was Errol Flynn when he was playing Custer. They died with their boots on.
Yeah, what a film! I love it.
Yeah, which tied in very interestingly to the same time frame. And then, of course, The Outlaw Josie Wales with Clint Eastwood, which is also another interesting top two that came to mind. I go, yeah, they were taking guns away from everybody. You couldn't even have a squirrel rifle, you know, but they ended up giving them their stuff, gave them a last meal, and then they assassinated all these Southerners, but it was very vicious. But I keep going back to Custer, which was an excellent movie. They died with their boots on about what they did back then. All this stuff with these famous generals and how they did things and conducted themselves. In fact, in the movie They Died With Their Boots On, they both had people at the same academy. I believe it was probably Annapolis. And at some point in time, that's when the Civil War broke out. And they actually played Dixie while the people from the South went, marched off to go to their homes in the South to fight the war right there. So it's kind of weird how they did things. But I'm glad James brought the stuff about the physical attributes of Lincoln. I'm 6'3". Lincoln was 6'4". Tall, lanky, very strong and all that. And here's a 5 foot, 5'6", 7 or 8 Booth. Can you imagine him trying to reach up and try to do any of that, reaching to stab or not, but even just to shoot. It's always a headshot. That's the key element that we were talking in the Secret Service Academies. You got poisoning. You got all these other things. And with technology, I've always kept my agency, former agency, informed about drones and things like that. But it's always a headshot. You can't risk doing a body shot, but that's what happens. It's always a headshot thing. So maybe James could remember all the comparisons they used to do years ago. Remember the movie Executive Action? Burt Lancaster, Robert Ryan, and all that.
Sure.
All that. I used to look at that over the years and go, well, I've got a different view now. I've got a more different, varied background, more extensive background. So I look at all the mistakes in these historic films. But do you remember all the stuff where they compared the Lincoln assassination with the JFK assassination? Yeah, they went from the one location from the Ford Theater to the White House where he later died. And the secretary's name was whatever. You know, and all these other things back
Kennedy.
And forth.
And Kennedy's secretary was
that's right. Later. That's right. Kennedy's secretary and all that. So there's all these prophetic comparisons. Has James run across any prophetic information as well?
Well, I don't specifically mention that in my book, but many people have pointed out that there were a lot of interesting comparison between Kennedy and Lincoln, both elected in the year ended in 60. Both with vice presidents named Johnson, both killed with gunshots to the head, both killed right when they're sitting right next to their wives. And in both cases, the alleged assassin was killed before he could go to trial. In both cases, they were killed by men with a pretty good shot, single bullet, putting to death each assassin.
Yeah, that'd be like the Jack Ruby with Oswald versus the military guy.
Except Booth really did shoot Lincoln, and Oswald was standing in the doorway of the book depository when the motorcade passed by and didn't fire a shot. So
that's true. It's always the lone male gunman, so I'm trying to figure out how far back they could take it. John Wilkes Booth. I actually know a guy named John Wilkes when I was at U.S. Customs, which is interesting. I don't think about it that way, but it is an interesting. He probably got teased all of his life. Can you imagine? You know.
Well,
James, when we come up on the break, is it good with you if we open the line to callers? Would that be
That'd be just fine, sir.
Excellent, excellent. Well, why don't you add a couple more thoughts before we hit the break, and then I'll.
Well, the telegraph wires went down right after Lincoln's assassination, and I have the quote in my book. I won't give you the full quote.
That Stott would be a guy in a position to do that, James. Don't you agree? I mean, he's the one who would have been able to control these matters.
Stanton put the telegraph industry under the War Department control. And who's the man in charge of it? Thomas Eckert. The night assassination, the man in charge of the telegraph industry is Thomas Eckert, the same man who refused to be Lincoln's bodyguard at Ford's Theater. And he was questioned about this by the House Judiciary Committee in 1867. And he said, well, it only lasted 2 hours. I didn't think it was important. Well, 2 hours gives the assassins a 2 hour head start before the news of Lincoln's assassination is communicated. And he asked, did you look into the reason for this? He said, no, I was too busy. And then people have pointed out, wait a minute, that's the reason he gave Lincoln for not being his bodyguard. I'm too busy, Mr. President. Well, I could keep hearing this excuse from Eckert. Yeah. And Eckert, by the way, Eckert, after he becomes Assistant Secretary of War, leads
James
the government.
We'll be right back. Okay. We'll be right back. Right back.
We did the same thing with the Canada thing.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, if anyone would like to call in, the number is 608-957-8727. 608-957-8727. Meanwhile, we'll continue the discussion. John, go ahead.
Oh, I had a comment before I forget. What James brings up is really important to notice is the fact that when they shut down the communications back in those days, they still did it during the Kennedy assassination. All communications was disrupted. Telephone calls in the Washington, D.C. area were shut down. Even on the JFK movie with Oliver Stone, Donald Sutherland played a special CIA guy describing, they even put out the message about the assassination in Australia, you know, like 12 hours or 24 hours before it actually happened, you know. So they were already preparing all these things. But it still seems to fit a certain pattern that, oh, yeah, you disrupt the enemy's communication, which allows the people to get escape, like James said, and so on and so forth. It's the same pattern. You know, it's like they go back in the playbook and go, okay, what did we do back then? What did we improve? How do we update it? And I could discuss modern technology stuff, but that might be a little bit farther ahead than we need to. But go ahead.
Can you guys hear me at all?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. I only heard about 1/4 of what John just said. And it says your network bandwidth is low.
Oh,
it's
there you go.
Saying I have a problem with my internet connection.
You've got two opener.
But now. You guys can hear me now?
We can hear you crystal clear. Just go right
okay,
ahead.
I could not hear John's comments enough to put them together.
John was saying that they study past assassination to see how they can improve when they make a new attempt, learning from it, refining, but there are many similarities. That sort of thing was his
disruption latest. Of communications, basically.
Yeah. Go ahead,
right. Okay. So I was just picking up where I was leaving off. I was starting to talk about how Eckert became the Assistant Secretary of War. After he left the government, he became an employee of Jay Gould, the robber baron, and he wound up becoming chairman and president of Western Union. And usually you don't get those kind of positions unless you have very powerful people behind you. I should also mention that concerning the pursuit of John Wilkes Booth, he escaped Washington by crossing a bridge. It was called the Navy Yard Bridge. And there was a curfew in effect in Washington at that time. No civilian without a pass and the password could cross after 9 o'clock. Now, this has been in effect over almost 2.5 years. Booth often stayed in Washington. He had to know Washington had a 9 o'clock curfew. So how does he get across the bridge? Here's the actual order that military men were under, quote, no person except general officers would be passed over any of the several crossings between the hours of 9 p.m. and daylight without the countersign, meaning password, and a pass. So people may try and say that, well, Booth was an actor. He figured he could be glib and get his way past the guards. No, if he didn't get past those guards at that bridge, he would have to go back into Washington where lynch mobs are already being formed. Everybody knows John Wilkes Booth is his assassin. He's done it and made it, shouted his words in front of at least 1,500 witnesses. Everywhere the word is spreading, John Wilkes Booth is the assassin. He probably would have been lynched before he even police could get to him. So how does he know he'll get across this bridge? The only evidence we have on how he got across the bridge is from the sergeant who was commander of that bridge, Sergeant Silas Cobb. Booth and his companion, writing companion David Harold, both made it across the bridge despite of orders to the contrary. And what Sergeant Cobb said was this. He said that at 10:25, and this is about right because it's 10 minutes after the assassination, Booth came riding up. He said, "Sorry, sir, no one allowed to pass after 9 p.m. Booth says, "Oh, I didn't know there was an order like that. I need to get my home in Maryland." And Cobb says, "What are you doing out so late?" And Booth says, "Well, I wanted to wait for the moon to come up so I could see the roads better." So Cobb says, okay, go ahead. Then after that, David Harold comes up. Now, Booth really needs David Harold because David Harold really knows the roads of Maryland very well. And Cobb says, "Sorry, kid, nobody can pass up to 9 p.m. Harold says, "I didn't know there was a rule like that." And Cobb says, "What are you doing out so late?" He says, "Well, you know what it is, sir. I have a tryst with a young lady, but I live in Maryland. I really got it at home." So Cobb says, "Okay, kid, you can go ahead." All right, now that's the only information we have. It comes from Sergeant Cobb. But here's a couple of things. Booth has to have a guarantee to get across that bridge or he's a dead man. Number two, why isn't Cobb punished? He's just let the president's assassins escape in violation of a standing military order. You'd think he'd be court-martialed, stripped of his sergeant stripes. He would have been punished. But not just like the bodyguard, Stanton, normally ruthless, does absolutely nothing to him.
Yeah, the indications that Stanton was the key player and in the position to cover it up was simply overwhelming. Paul, we have you right there on the line. Go ahead, offer your thoughts.
I was listening to what your guest was reading there, and, you know, the thought just crossed my mind. How do we know that any of that was said? You know, I mean, I've read a bit on the assassination as well, and I've heard shows about it. And at this point, I think almost everything that has been written about a lot of history is suspect. You know, I just got an email the other day from someone. Now, I've seen these sort of photos before, and the email pictured the pictures of two different Joe Bidens, right? And, I mean, I don't know that either one of them is actually Joe Biden, okay? But I just made the comment in a flip manner as a response, you know, because a lot of times you, I mean, if I do want to respond, I might want to come up with some kind of a quip. So I don't feel like writing anything of any length. And I just said, well, which one's president? And then I realized as soon as I wrote it and sent it, you know, how much there was to what I just put down. With, you know, you got two different Joe Bidens. One of them could be the real Joe Biden, but, you know, you've done work, Jim, on, you know, the at least a couple different Hillary Clintons and so forth. And, you know, the point being, you know, which one's president? Well, neither one. Right. In other words, none of these people are in charge. They can replace them easily. They can do a fake assassination attempt for whatever purposes. Kind of makes me wonder about the Reagan attempt, too. I was listening to a show, and I mean, how do we really know that he was really actually hit, you know, with whatever it was? I know.
Well, Paul, you just have, you know, the best people doing the best they can to reconstruct. Reagan appears to have been shot under the armpit when the Secret Service agent was pushing him into the vehicle with a flechette. But look, about the Biden, I don't know if you caught the early part of the show. They got a new Biden. He's like much taller. He looks like a basketball player, Paul. It's embarrassing.
I know, and it makes my point precisely, which is this. None of these people are president in terms of actual real authority. You know, the power on the throne. You know, we've all heard about the power behind the throne. Well, in this situation, can we really say who's running the show? We all have speculation. I mean, was it Klaus Schwab? Is it George Soros? Is it the BlackRock? Is it the CIA? I mean, this is precisely the point, right? We don't ever get what it is we want, right? And we're not going to get what we want with Trump.
Well, your question, I'm inclined to agree with you at this point in time, Paul, about Trump. That is not going to be what we think or have hope. James, Paul was just challenging about the conversation getting across a bridge.
He asked, how do we know that this is what was actually said? Now, the only thing we do have is Sergeant Cobb's statement. That exists. And was Sergeant Cobb lying? Did Booth perhaps have a pass and know the countersign? Or was Cobb perhaps tipped off in advance to let these two men pass? We don't know. But based on the evidence we do have, which is his written statement, which I don't particularly believe, and tying that together with many other pieces of indirect evidence, such as this, the finger keeps going back of guilt towards Stanton and the War Department. I'm trying to point out consistent inconsistencies. Right. Whether or not that was really what was said at the bridge, I don't know. We only have Sergeant Cobb's statement, but like so many parts of this puzzle, there are a lot of holes in it that don't make sense, such as his failure to be punished.
Stanton could have given him a pass, which obviously it would be respected on the bridge. I mean, Stanton was so powerful at this point in time and became increasingly so. I think you've really done, I think, a masterful job, James, of pointing at the true conspirators behind the assassination. Paul, your further thoughts.
So, James, are you familiar with a book called Web of Conspiracy regarding the Lincoln assassination?
I've heard that title. I have not read that book unless it was a very long time ago.
Who's the author, Paul?
I actually don't know. It's one of the books that I have somewhere that I am not that familiar with. You know, we all have tons. I got all kinds of books, and most of them I've read, and I can tell you the author, the title, what they're about. But this one I dabbled in because at the time when I got it, I was probably in my mid to late 20s, and I just didn't have the mind that I would later develop. But yeah, I mean, the point being, though, is that all we really have in after this length of time, or of course in general, is pretty much what has been reported already and what we've been told. And of course, what you're saying about the statement of this sergeant, you know, I just find the whole thing to be similar to what we're seeing in general and the point that I normally have made, which is we're spectators in an audience, you know, we're watching a play and the actors and actresses are shuffled about and the scenery changes. And we can only really know for sure so much.
Of course. We're just doing our best to sort out who are the actors and which events are real and which are fake or staged. James, you want to add further?
Yeah, there's a lot of fakery going on. The idea is to view the patterns of deception and analyze the consistencies that we can see amongst the inconsistencies and to determine that there was another story than the official one. I should mention, by the way, one of the things I didn't realize when I started writing this book was there has been an elaborate campaign to dismiss Otto Eisenschimmel's 1937 book, which was so powerful that in 1971, NBC, on Lincoln's birthday in 1971, had a major documentary. It was made by Wolper Productions, which was also made Roots, North and South, and 200 other productions, many of them well-known. And it's a lab of production, and it made the same points we're making. Why was Lincoln denied the bodyguard? Why did the bodyguard desert his post? Why were the telegraph wires shut down? Why did Stanton leave the road unpatrolled that Booth took, which we haven't even gotten into yet? Why was John Wilkes Booth's diary, was it kept hidden for 2 years? And when it was finally found out about, why were 86 pages missing from that diary? Why did so many key documents vanish from document files that related to assassination? This was 1971. Now, remember, in 1971, nobody had smartphones or PCs they could look at. So with over 95% of American homes having TVs, and remember the only three networks back then, ABC, CBS, and NBC, many millions of people had to be tuned into NBC that night and seen this documentary, which made the very same points I'm raising tonight. But what I discovered as I wrote this book was that there's been a tremendous campaign to wipe out this information, and the modern mainstream historians, Hanchett, Hall, Steers, et cetera, have had an elaborate campaign to smear Eisenschimmel and to wipe out the memory of talking points that were once, relatively speaking, common amongst American people 50 to 80 years ago. And that's one reason why I wanted to write this book, was to bring these points of evidence back to the public mind, which have been forgotten about deliberately.
Right. So if you wouldn't mind, because I'd be interested to hit a few of these references, like this book you talked about, Eisenschimmel. I've never heard of it, so I would like to take a look at that. And some other things, if you want to leave with Jim, just like a brief, you know, thumbnail of some of the things that you are, the things that you referred to, I'd love to look into it. But I'm going to make an interesting point. This has happened to me recently. I think we all know what they're doing overall with erasing the past, making it very difficult for us to find out the truth pretty much about anything using the conventional search engines. And so here's an experience. So, Jim, I'm sure you're familiar with the documentary that Sophia made called 9/11 Mysteries, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, and I'm sure you've seen it. I hadn't seen it in a while, and I was actually rewatching some of it the other day. Well, here's what happened, just for the fun of it. So there was a link that was from another site that was embedded, okay? And it was a YouTube link. So what I did is I went to YouTube, right? And I used the YouTube search engine to look for this film. And I typed it in exactly. In other words, I typed in 9/11 Mysteries full length, which is what the title was of this embedded link in another site. And do you think it took me to it? No. I scrolled through page after page after page of, in many cases, oddly unrelated work. And I never found it. And I've had this experience with other things before where it actually still does exist on a link at YouTube and you can find it, right? But to get to it, and of course, as you know, in general, when you go to YouTube now, it's become the Globe or the National Enquirer. I mean, it's so disgusting. It's so salacious. It's so clickbait. You know, the pictures and the titles are full of ridiculous innuendo and in many cases completely misleading. So they are really, in many ways, erasing the past. And I'm not sure exactly where it's all going, but I'm certainly disgusted by it.
Yeah, good points, John. I'm sure you have thoughts you'd like to toss in.
No, I'm listening to the information there. You have to use a different browser. I've been through this stuff before. While I was on the show, just in the last half hour, something deleted my tab. So I had to go back and recover it. So I've learned this procedure. Reference to YouTube. Yeah, they have been controlled over the last half, 6 months to a year. Use a different browser. Use DuckDuckGo. Don't use Google Chrome. Use all the other ones. Tor, Signal, Brave, etc. When an extreme case comes up, I've got a backup Brave browser so I can go in and search so you can get the proper research responses. But that's an indicator that they're still covering up the truth, even as far back as they can go, to keep deleting the intel, deleting the truth. Even a friend of mine, Rodney Stitch, who wrote a book about the plane crashes, I was in his book, Drug in America, or I still am. He passed away years ago at 93. They were trying to remove his Wikipedia description. And I had to go message those people and tell them, this guy's for real. I've got a background. Here's the stuff. And they apparently were going to put it back in. They're constantly removing patriotic type information and intel.
John, Wikipedia's a Zionist op. I've had repeated problem with them where I tried to correct misleading false statements about scholars for 9/11 truth, which I founded, and they wouldn't let me do it. They told me they wouldn't let me do it. They had all kinds of spears of me. I had an excellent page up until I did a conference in 2014 on the campus of the University of Illinois, in which we discussed, you know, are there limits to inquiry using JFK 9/11 and the Holocaust as examples? And some guy down under took offense and he just destroyed my Wikipedia page. I've been able to discover it, you know, using a Wayback, but I mean, they can be vicious.
Yeah, they're pretty accurate up to a point.
I know, Paul, you've been saying the problem with YouTube are more extensive than a year. Yes, absolutely. The Sandy Hook people have taken down hundreds and hundreds of videos exposing the fraud because it was such an amateurish production, but that goes way back. Those go all the way back to 2012.
Let me give you one more example. Was a guy actually protected, which was Stanislav Lunyev, the former KGB colonel, the highest ranking defector from Russia. He passed away a couple of years ago, but I happened to go to a Wikipedia and they had some other Russian guy, dark hair, semi-bald, with a Russian uniform. I said, that's not Stanislav. That's not him. Right. So I Wikipedia messaged them and they took it off. So sometimes. Yeah.
So here's the thing that, of course, is troubling is, so, you know, it's been mentioned about all these different browsers or search engines that you should use. But most people, of course, are not doing that. Most people are going to use, you know, Google Chrome or Safari and, you know, the conventional ones as a rule. And I mean, Miles Mathis covers this all the time in his papers when he looks into the genealogy of some of these people, and he talks about the fact that a lot of it's been scrubbed because they could go in. And of course, all this information, no matter what it is, for the most part, originated somewhere from a firsthand source and a piece of paper, you know, or a book. And so they have essentially transcribed all the actual physical information that existed at one point and put it online, and then of course now they're shuffling it around,
or it can be edited and manipulated. Paul, you're absolutely right.
And I was shocked, like I said, I shared this one example, but there's been others. But to me, this was particularly egregious because I put the exact title in 9/11 Mysteries with the exact upper and lowercase and put in full length, and I just go into YouTube and I search on YouTube.
You got it.
And it would not take me to it.
Oh, we got it. James, look, I think you got a wonderful book here. I'm very, very impressed. We only have a brief moments left. I'd like you to just say what you'd like to say about what your audience would like to know about your book. I mean, it's on Amazon.com. Hasn't yet been banned. Six of mine have, but there it is. I like what you've done here, James.
Yeah. It's very I've only been banned once on Amazon. And hopefully they won't be doing it with this book because there are other books that challenge the Lincoln assassination that have not been banned. It's probably a little too far in the distance for them to do that. But yeah, there's quite a bit more evidence. And you actually get a very good review at the beginning. You're actually reading from my Amazon description, but I think one of the most powerful pieces of evidence in the Lincoln assassination is John Wilkes Booth's diary. Now, at the trial of John Wilkes Booth, alleged accomplices, eight of them, they entered into evidence his pistols, everything found on him, except for three things: knife, pistols, belt, holster, file, compass, spur, tobacco pipe, carbon, cartridges, and bills of exchange, notes from a bank. But they didn't enter into evidence his diary. And nobody knew John Wilkes Booth had a diary until 2 years later, 1867. Stanton had a break with the head of the Secret Service, Lafayette Baker. He fired Baker, then Baker went off on his own. He wrote a book called The History of the Secret Service. And in that book, he revealed that Booth had a diary. And the public went wild. Congress went wild. They say, we want to see this diary. And now the chief prosecutor named Joseph Holt, the judge advocate general, was asked, why didn't you introduce the diary at the trial? He said, I didn't think it was relevant. How could the tobacco? Let me quote what Congressman Benjamin Butler said. He said, I want to know this. It was a good judgment on the part of the gentleman prosecuting the assassins to put in evidence the tobacco pipe, spur, and compass found in Booth's pocket Why was not the diary in his own handwriting found in the same pocket put in evidence? Now, this diary had elements that could have cleared two of the people who were sentenced to life in prison, because the diary revealed there was no plot to assassinate Lincoln until the day of the assassination, and two of those people, Dr. Mudd and a guy named Samuel Arnold, were far away from Washington the day of the assassination. They hadn't been in touch with Booth in a long time, and there's no way they could have been discussing assassinating the president with Booth, and yet they got life in prison. And the FBI confirmed this, by the way, in 1977. I think we have enough time just to mention this. 1977, you can find it online. I quote it in my book. The FBI says, quote, "The forensic laboratory investigated the Booth diary in 1970 at the request of the National Park Service," quote. "In total, there are 43 full sheets, 86 pages missing from the diary," and unquote. And the FBI found that the 27 pages immediately preceding the day of the assassination were missing. And these weren't blank pages, because you could still see the edges of the pages that had fragments of Booth's handwriting on them. Somebody removed those pages. And it wasn't Booth, because some of those pages got re-glued back in.
What could be more obvious? It was Stanton. He was the guy in the...
He was given the diary by the officer who took it off Booth's body before Booth even died. He brought it straight to Stanton. Stanton kept it a secret, although the prosecutor, Joseph Holt, knew about it. So did Eckert. And so did the head of the Secret Service, Lafayette Baker. But it was kept a secret for 2 years. Obviously, the people who kept it secret for 2 years are also the people who removed those pages because they knew it would incriminate them. But that's just one of the more powerful pieces. But there's much more evidence in my book, again.
This is wonderful, James. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I love it. I love it. Yeah, I love your cover, too. It's got this historical character to it. I love it, James. Honest to God. I want to see how...
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. No, it's just called Exploding the Official Myths of the Lincoln Assassination. Right. Longest title I've ever had, but it's got those subtitled to make up for it.
Can you hold it up again?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. There you go. Yeah. Got it.
Paul, thanks for the call. John, for your expert commentary as a former Secret Service agent. Jane Barloff, you have a wonderful book. I'm just delighted you could join me today. Mm-hmm. About this, and I encourage everyone to check it out. It is available on Amazon.com. Meanwhile, spend as much time as you can with your family, your friends, and people you love and care about, because we do not know how much time we have left. And support Revolution Radio. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday.
Hey, look for my book, Open Target. That's coming out soon, too. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.